Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 30th day of May, 2020. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and we've got a whole lot to talk about tonight, perhaps from a slightly different perspective than I often do, because the world is pretty much undeniably doing what the Bible's been warning us about for generations now. But you know what, folks? We are going to be in a position to live to see it. So that's the good news. The bad news, I think, is obvious. And let me start where I want to go today with just a couple of reminders of the latest incidents that show us exactly what the intent is, at least from the satanic forces that think they still run the world, and what is really going on. From Minnesota Stan, for example, we've had riots over the last few days. Minneapolis, as one pundit put it, a vibrant hellhole of diversity, is showing the way to the looting, riots, and arson that Big Brother and the deep state minions and those who, pretend to follow the God of the Bible, but sometimes aren't even dropping, they're dropping that pretense now. Well, what they have planned. It's increasingly obvious. We're going to talk about that today at the risk of being called, we've been there before, conspiracy theorists. When it comes to Minnesota Stan, though, I do want to point out that the claimed reason for the riots, besides wanting to get free TVs and lots of groceries during the middle of a coming economic depression, is because of the admittedly gang, blue gang related death of a black man. There was some cops that one of which put his boot or knee at least on the neck of this fellow for a number of minutes until he was dead. But the same people, you notice, didn't riot when a Somali Muslim immigrant, so-called cop, killed a white woman, a young Justine Diamond, or Diamond, in cold blood, literally on her own property a while back. So things don't quite wash here. Now, I'm going to suggest that the real issue, as it has always been, at least for the last few years, is to foment all kinds of destructive responses, whether it's race riots or civil war or the currently in progress economic depression. And that's where I want to spend the most time today. That's where we'll start with a couple of stories that I think will kind of lay all of this out. One is from Austrian economist Peter Schiff. I followed Peter's work among other Austrians for years. By the way, Austrian economics is not a whole lot different than biblical economics. Basically, it says that if you have a dishonest system of weights and measures, fiat money, and you keep printing it, as inevitably will happen when it goes to the place it will inevitably go, which is the biggest debt bubble in the history of the world, followed by what Ludwig von Mises called the inevitable end, hyperinflation, a.k.a. the crack-up boom. Well, things get reset, and we're pushing for the reset now. Anyway, Peter Schiff is one of several who's been writing about this meltdown, saying that for years he too's been warning about how a permanent stimulus, like we've seen since the Federal Reserve's reaction to the dot-com crash 20 years ago in 2000, the result is that each successive economic contraction has to be met with ever larger and increasingly ineffective, it's called the marginal decrease in the effectiveness, in other words, it gets weaker and weaker. You see the same thing with drug highs. Each additional hit of cocaine produces less euphoria than before, just like each additional hit of new printed out of nothing money produces less euphoria than it did before. The doses of money, monetary and economic and fiscal stimulus to keep the economy from spiraling into depression, they lose their power. I've also said, says Schiff, that the enormity of the asset price gains over the last 10 years has increased the danger of what's coming, because reflating the bloated stock, real estate, public and private debt markets would bring on doses of stimulus that could, and I will suggest will, inevitably, as history has shown over and over again and Scripture has always said, prove lethal for the economy. Now, here's where it gets interesting. As Schiff puts it, even though I expected that the next financial crisis would be catastrophic, you can't have the biggest debt bubble without the biggest pop, I still thought that it would come into the world in the usual way, with a credit crisis triggered by over-leverage. But the coronavirus, or COVID-1984, as I like to call it, pandemic, or plandemic, which fits better, has ripped up those stage notes, and instead it's ushered in a threat which is faster and deeper than I could have imagined, and I imagined a lot. It's a perfect storm, and I like this term. He calls it a black swan with teeth. and says, yeah, even in my most pessimistic assessments, I didn't expect that so many seemingly distant sectors of the world economy would simultaneously evaporate almost overnight, or that government deficits would expand to nearly $4 trillion. And that's more money than existed in the world not long ago, folks, in the first wave of the crisis. Or that the Federal Reserve would so suddenly launch its largest ever experiment in quantitative easing. You might know that as money printing to infinity. And this time they did it with almost none of what they called forward guidance that they've used to telegraph lesser bailouts in less panicked eras. Nor did I expect, he said, that they'd expand their balance sheet by more than $3 trillion in a matter of just months. Nor did I expect that at its outset, the Fed's new buying plan would include, for the first time ever, things like corporate bonds and high-yield debt, ETFs and the like. I thought those would come eventually, he said, just not immediately. Well, we're just getting rolling. To make matters even worse, this crisis struck in the midst of a presidential election year. Some of us will suggest, and I'll get there in a few minutes, that that was planned. And that guarantees that every policy decision has been made through a political prism. Democrats are seizing on the crisis to try to claim that the Trump administration is incompetent, ineffective, and, oh, most importantly, uncaring. And in the process, they have to twist themselves into knots. Meanwhile, Trump has done himself no favors. I suggested, folks, that 2-3 years ago, the president made probably the biggest mistake, well, it's tough, but one of the biggest mistakes anyway of his presidency, by taking credit for a stock market bubble that was destined to pop. And here he is holding the bag on that one. He's also showcased his inconsistent policy positions, says Schiff, correctly. His tenuous grasp of medical concepts, his even more tenuous grasp of the Constitution and Bill of Rights and so forth. So, in contrast to prior national crises that at least for a while supposedly helped pull the country together, think 9/11, this one is tearing us apart, and I will suggest that is precisely as intended. Now, there is, however, one thing upon which both sides, both supposed sides, both wings of the same evil bird of prey, flapping in unison, seem to agree. Big brother, federal government must bail out the economy with what? Oh, the usual newly printed money. Bail out everyone who has any claim that COVID wasn't my fault. And, of course, to fully liquefy the financial markets. The result has been an increase in government spending, big as it was, that now dwarfs everything we've ever seen in the past. And that includes Big Brother's response to the 2008 attempt to blow the bubble up. And all of this is just the beginning. All right, here's where things get interesting, and this takes us to where I really want to go for the rest of the show today. These so-called political differences, such as they are, now center merely on matters of degree. Like how long the economy should remain closed, how much destruction should we foment, how many businesses, jobs, and family financial plans should be, well, destroyed, literally decimated, well, decimated isn't as bad as destroyed, undermined in order to save a life. And since we're looking at 40 million jobs and we just crossed 100,000 alleged COVID deaths, even if we inflate that number dramatically, that means that so far it's about 400 to 1, 400 jobs destroyed or eliminated, most of them permanently, for each death. And ironically, even the cruelest don't tend to point this out, but hey, let's be real here today. Most of those who died were well past working age anyway. So if you think about it in terms of an economic devastation, it's really even worse than that. Now, says Schiff, most Democrats, I'll cross that out, Bolsheviks, are claiming that they're solely motivated by a desire to save as many lives as possible, no matter how dramatic the cost. But given the economic and scientific idiocy of what they're recommending, he lists a few. I think the burkas that people wear to show that they're good little slaves of the almighty state, even though they have absolutely no positive effect and probably increase the wearer's exposure to the virus for various reasons, like hypoxia and more CO2 in the bloodstream and rebreathing their own effluent and so forth. There are a lot of reasons to recognize, to see through the so-called remedial measures that Big Brother is trying to put in place here. Ultimately, you just have to conclude that those pushing the lockdowns are really more interested in enacting all sorts of radical economic transformations than they are saving lives. And remember what Rahm Emanuel said, hey, Never let a perfectly good crisis go to waste. All right, he goes into some more political discussion. I'm going to skip over all of that. He does note, and I think this is at least one good point, you can look at the People's Republic of Communist California under complete control of the socialists and recognize that even though their death rate per capita is less by a large amount than the national average, they still seem to be committed to, committing economic suicide. He gives example of Los Angeles County, where the lockdown orders are going to stay in place until August, and the bar that's been set before we can Octung ever reopen anything is so high that it seems pretty clear it was designed never to be cleared. Some of the government's immediate responses have also been laughably inept. Take the Paycheck Protection Program, providing direct payments to workers who've lost their jobs or whatever. And a lot of these are significantly higher than the former wages that they earned, with the result that a lot of them don't even want to come back to work, at least not until the unemployment runs out, and then there'll be riots, you can guess. All of this is dangerous territory, says Peter Schiff. As former libertarian leader Harry Brown once said, and I remember Harry, had the opportunity to share the stage with him on several occasions, wonderful man, he would put his leanings this way, saying, look, government breaks your leg, and then they hand you a crutch, and they say, see, if it weren't for us, you wouldn't be able to walk. Well, that's precisely what's happening here. For countries that issue currencies that are not the world reserve currency, i.e. everything else outside the United States, the playbook is radically different. A blatant debt monetization where they sell their newly created bonds to the central banks usually ends up pretty quickly in rampant, even hyperinflation, and that wipes them out. But since the dollar, at least for now, sits at the center of the fake fiat-based global financial system, even as it tears itself apart, that does create a built-in demand, because most cross-border transactions still, for now again, need dollars to execute. And that, says Peter Schiff, allows Washington to consider policy options that would be just plain too risky for lesser countries. So with the Trump card now tucked into our sleeve, the United States is prepared to engage in the biggest experiment in money creation, fiat out of nothing, that the world has ever seen. This is one of several points here that I want to drive home today. It's not like we haven't talked about it on this show many times before, folks, and it's not like I haven't pointed out that Scripture calls dishonest weights and measures an abomination, even says there are curses associated with them. Oh, we are fixing to see those curses big time. The hubris of the American monetary system, though, says Peter Schiff, means that no plan will be devised to steer us out of this dead end where we're headed, which is zero or even negative interest rates, and there's no plan to create an economy that can survive what's coming without government life support. I'm going to suggest, and so are many others that I'll quote today, that the end game here is clear. It's to tear it all down. They believe a new phoenix, the global economic reset, will cause their new Bitcoin or ultimately Mark of the Beast type system to rise out of the ashes. Scripture's made that very clear. I've talked about it for a long time. But I'm going to quote some other economic gurus who will make a similar point from a different perspective. All right. We will be showering money, says Schiff, on a country that has already too much of it, at a time when the supply of goods and services is diminished. And as a matter of fact, it's downright broken. The supply chain is pretty much dead due to work stoppages, production declines, distribution bottlenecks, import restrictions, and so on. Not to mention a coming world economic crisis and perhaps even world war. Even, he notes, and so do others, if all the restaurant and retail employees were to come back to work tomorrow, ignore all of the disincentives, there's still no certainty that customers will follow. And furthermore, the socialist distancing procedures that are already in place will reduce the quality of the experience while increasing its cost. In other words, folks, Big Brother has used the crisis, like Rahm Emanuel suggested, to destroy those businesses. Those that will reopen will find that they're only doing so at 25 or 50% of their previous occupancy. They're going to have to put in all kinds of stupid measures. Imagine having a nice steak dinner while you're wearing your silly mask, or putting plastic dividers at the tables, increasing costs. This is just downright insane, and any reasonable economic analysis says, look, there's no intention here except to destroy it all. wide swaths of business sectors, note shift, are simply going to cease to be. In sum, there are many reasons to suspect that a very deep recession, or more likely a depression, will remain. I'm going to suggest it's already cast in stone, even after the booga 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 part of the disease subsides. So don't expect a V-shaped economic rebound. More money will be chasing fewer goods and services, which is a recipe for stagflation at minimum. And most dangerously, we're seeing the same thing now happening in the food supply. Meat processors, farmers are facing difficulties in getting products to market. We see in North Carolina 1.5 million chickens are being euthanized just at the time when people are saying, hey, we sure like to eat those chickens. How about that? No, no, sorry, we can't get them to you, so we're just going to do what governments do, kill and destroy. When you get right down to it, this crisis exposes, says Schiff, just how deeply the decay of debt has undermined the entire world economy. Now, the forced shutdowns and the socialist distancing would have been a serious blow, even to a very robust economy, perhaps not fatal, because if we had sufficient savings, we might have been able to survive for a bit longer. Long enough to allow economic activity to restart. But credit's never been so cheap, nor so freely given over recent decades, and the incentive to save has never been lower. Almost like the disincentive to save was engineered in so that the economy could be ready for this 1-2 punch death blow. Consumers have learned to live paycheck to paycheck. Interest rates near zero have resulted in small businesses relying on business lines of credit to pay their current bills. You don't have to have cash flow worries. And mega corporations are using the easy money to buy back their own shares, trading long-term stability for short-term share price appreciation. Why? Well, because they get bonuses based on that. In short, in such an environment, any economic interruptions that constrain short-term revenues, almost like they're designed, create an immediate crisis. And without the life support of savings, well, Big Brother is the only option. Yeah, they will bail themselves out, ride to the rescue. And the problem is, as Schiff puts it, politicians show up with the economic equivalent of pep pills, cocaine, and leeches. And if we have half a brain, we can see where this is going. Now, from there, I'm going to go to and then back to a piece from another one of my favorites, Clive Mond, who's kind of a technical analyst, writes about the economic situation, looks particularly at markets, things like gold and silver and various indicators. But his piece this week is a bit different, and it's a little bit more forward-looking. It's called Getting Positioned for the Worst Depression in the History of the World. Well, as you might suspect, given that I've been talking about that for years now, it kind of resonated with me. Let me begin the way he does, and then we'll take a look at a couple of the other conspiracy confirmations and come back to this piece. But the gargantuan global debt bubble, begins Mond, is now imploding at an astounding and terrifying rate. Yeah, the virus is acting as a catalyst to speed up a process that was already inevitable. But thanks to the lockdowns and the massive economic disruption they're causing, the global economy is coming to a dead stop. Things like airlines, catering, and tourism industries are the first victims. They've largely been destroyed in just the space of a couple of months. He talks about some examples. Not long ago on TV, there was the extraordinary sight of hundreds of cars all over the United States snaking in lines, sometimes miles in length, to collect food handouts. And these weren't the clunkers like you saw back in the Beverly Hillbillies days. These were SUVs and Mercedes. And what became clear as they were interviewed is that the people stuck in these lines were just a few months ago or even weeks ago living comfortable middle-class lifestyles, albeit laden with debt. How do you think they got those new cars? And then they suddenly found themselves with no work, no income, and guess what? More debt than they would have imagined, so they're broke. They may have thought this was just a temporary phenomenon, not realizing that in the future they'll be lucky if they can be affording, if they can afford to run those vehicles. And what we're seeing here, and he's not the first to say this, is the modern equivalent of the 1930s Depression-era soup kitchen lines. Yep, we are already in a depression. Now, he goes through a quick but very excellent reminder of exactly how we got here and why this biggest debt bubble in human history is so important. The reason is he's called this article, Getting Positioned for the Worst Depression in the History of the World, is that debt and derivatives have never, ever built up to such vast levels on an entirely global scale before. And what does that mean? When this bubble pops, and it has, it will take a correspondingly severe depression to eliminate this gargantuan mountain of dross. Now, here he turns to another fellow that I've watched and read for a number of years, and that's Greg Mannarino. And he has the unique insight, says Mont, that a very big reason for the lockdowns, and I like this, I think he's exactly right, is that it was intentional. They wanted to intentionally kill the economy, and in the process, think about this, this is another one of those economic insights that may resonate with folks, but only after they think about it for a bit. Not just kill the economy, but bring the velocity of money to a dead stop. Why is that important? Well, it turns out the velocity of money is very much related to how long it takes to bring on hyperinflation. The people that get the new dollars first, i.e. those that print them, have the advantage of being able to spend them. But wait a minute, what if there's nothing to spend them on? What if the economy's at a dead stop? Nobody's going to hotels. Nobody's realizing that there's more cash running around because ain't nothing moving. That's a great point. As a result, the Fed can therefore create limitless amounts of money for a while to buy and backstop everything. Who's the only buyer? Answer, they are. Without immediately stoking inflation, leading to hyperinflation. Oh, and it also has one other benefit. This is a brilliantly, satanically evil plan, folks. It allows them to destroy small businesses so that their assets and workforces, and indeed even their business locations in downtown places and along highways and so forth, can be mopped up by the big mega corporations with their inside connections to Big Brother so that they can literally be the beneficiaries of the coming bailouts. The rich get richer. Have you ever heard that? While I agree, says Mont, that these were probably key objectives, I think there's also a simpler explanation for these destructive lockdowns, and this will basically take us to the break. I agree with him, too, by the way, and suggest the bigger answer is all of the above. Anyway, the gangsters now running the Western world realized that they've, taken the debt expansion to its extreme ultimate limit. They could no longer keep the game going, and of course, if you want to profit on the way down, you better control the timing. So they released the COVID-1984 booga 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 bug just in time. Everything was becoming dangerously unstable anyway. I remember talking about this back in September last year. Remember the repo market? It was starting to fly apart in the fall. They were printing money like there was no tomorrow. Something had to break, and along comes COVID. How conveniently, just in time. Necessitating more Fed intervention. So basically, says Mond, and I've been saying this too, they decided to pull the plug on the whole stinking thing, bring it down according to their schedule. And obviously, the resulting mass unemployment, riots, looting, mayhem, and all of that kind of stuff, well, it was going to happen anyway. Better still if you can use it for your political and economic advantage. Because guess what? The masses would come looking for someone to blame. We can't very well have them blaming the banksters now, can we? Oh, no, that's verboten. They might even come after their leaders with guns and pitchforks. So, well, no wonder they've been planning on banning the guns for quite a while. And instead, they've contrived a way to effectively impose martial law. Well, isn't it convenient? They don't actually have to call it that. And that further incenses the downtrodden masses, and hopefully, believe the globalist banksters, they'll come after Trump rather than the ones that really brought them to this feast. And Trump, again, has helped by taking credit for that huge bubble and stock market blow-up. So, hence, the release of the virus, which fooled the masses into locking themselves down. And yeah, while it undoubtedly, as a bioweapon, you know, has some killing power, that gives it credibility, the death and illness statistics have been fiddled with and grossly exaggerated by the powers that be and their compliant media. Hospitals are even being financially incentivized to label most deaths as COVID-1984, put people on ventilators, which causes more problems and so forth. And now you even have the sheeple putting on their fear masks, their plandemic placebos, and showing that they too are drinking the Kool-Aid and ready for whatever comes. Trouble is, they don't have a clue what's coming, and they really aren't ready after all. What that means is their lives are going to be far more at risk, and we'll talk about this after the break, from the coming and oh-so-well-planned destitution and hunger than they ever would have been from a little booga, 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 even if it's a bioweapon virus. Yeah. Welcome back now, folks, to the second half of the show for this evening. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and we're talking today about things that I've talked about before, but perhaps never with the degree of certainty, because we're there. When it comes to the economic meltdown, the biggest debt bubble in history, which has now popped, and as a result, the biggest depression, arguably also, ever in human history, which we are just beginning to see and understand how bleak it's going to be. As I went to break and during the first segment, I was talking about a number of economists, good people, as opposed to the kind that seem to work for the FedGov and want to pop, push first and then pop on command these bubbles. Folks like Peter Schiff, Clive Mond. Another one that's not an economist but that actually has written about this as well is Bill Sardi. And he published a good article making a similar point, saying Americans need to go back to work before you lose your country and your lives. Well, folks, it's too late for them to go back to work and have the country that we once had. I've been saying now for a period of weeks that America we knew has been lost, and I know that upsets some folks, but let's be real here. The Bolshevik Revolution, the 2.0 version, happened in America, and whether or not the sheeple realize it yet, when they put on their masks, they're basically confirming it. It's over. Before any America will return, it's going to take a counter-revolution. More importantly, it's going to take people waking up and realizing what they've lost and what they once had that they didn't seem to care enough about to actually protect. Sardi notes the following. Look and see how booga, booga, booga brave Americans are as they face the threat of the coronavirus. That's a laugh line almost. If you're brave enough to walk across the street without fear of being hit by a car, says a table in Sardi's piece, or eat a meal without thought of choking to death, you have the fearlessness to break the lockdown and quarantine and not increase your risk of dying. Hey, folks, you can even go into a Walmart without a mask and brave the evil looks of people who are too stupid to realize that they're killing themselves wearing those silly things. Cause of death and odds of dying is the headline on a chart he puts here. Odds of dying in a motor vehicle crash for the average American, 1 in 106. In a fall, 1 in 111. You can walk across the street and get hit by a car. That's just a little over the odds of 1 in 500 for the average American. How about swimming and drowning? 1 in just a little over 1,100. Eating, choking to death. You got to do that, you know, eat. That's 1 in 2,618. Bee stings, next in line, 1 in a little over, little less than 53,000. Hurricane and tornado, a little over 1 in 54,000. Now let's get to the, finally, way, 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 way down the list, the risk of dying of the COVID-19 84 coronavirus over the next 3 months. We've got 90, well, let's just call it a little over 100,000 deaths out of 330 million U.S. population. That's about 1 in 5,000. But wait! If you deduct 73% of the deaths, because the only ones that really are at risk are those that have pre-existing risk factors. Dark skin, which means low vitamin D is one of them, diabetes, obesity, high blood pressure. 73% of all U.S. COVID-1984 deaths had those pre-existing factors. That reduces the odds to about 1 in 13,000 plus for the average American. But wait! How about if you're under the age of 65 and don't have those pre-existing risk factors and you're not also confined indoors like nursing home patients and you're also not taking immune-suppressing drugs or vaccines or other poisons? You can deduct 99% of the deaths. So the odds of dying of COVID-19 for most Americans is 1 in about a third of a million, 3 per million people. How's that for tiny? But booga, 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 be afraid, be very afraid. Let's destroy the economy and increase your chances of dying in an arson, a riot, food riots, or in the, you know, response to the gangster hordes coming out of the big cities after they've killed everybody there and raiding the countryside. We'll find out how big those numbers are. Back to Peter Schiff then. And remember, as we went to the break, he was talking about another reason for killing the economy via the lockdowns was, as Manarino suggested, to stop the velocity of money from accelerating so that the Fed and its minions, the banksters, could create unlimited quantities of money to buy the whole world. Oh, and at the same time, they can prop up the stock markets for a little while longer, and more importantly, the debt markets to keep interest rates from spiking. Yeah, they're just trying to hold back the tide like King Canute. But ultimately, what people fail to realize is that these central banksters run the world, and that, as Mond puts it, governments are the mere puppet shows designed to amuse and distract the masses. We don't even have the pretense here of two parties anymore. Let me go from there to another more interesting, examination of the conspiracy side of this. Let's call this one Conspiracy Confirmed. Comes from Global Research and Peter Koenig. I saw it via the libertarian site lewrockwell.com. And Global Research tends to be a little bit more left-leaning than some of the more libertarian-oriented sites. This article is no exception, but still they make some interesting points. And it's interesting to see at least a little bit left-leaning people talking about the Conspiracies Confirmed. This one's called The Farce and Diabolical Agenda of the Universal Lockdown, and it begins like this. First comes the farce, an almost universal government lie around the globe about a booga 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 deadly virus that WHO named COVID-19. I still think COVID-1984 is a lot more apropos. The decision, though, for a global lockdown, literally for the collapse of the world economy, had already been taken. Hear that? Already been taken at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, in the latter part of January of this year, 2020. On January 30, WHO declared a public health emergency of international concern. No, that's not a pandemic. At the time, there were only 150 known cases outside of China. No reason whatsoever yet, they said, to declare a pandemic. But on March 11th, the WHO's converted the PHEIC into a plandemic, giving the green light for the start of implementing what this piece calls the plan. The plandemic was needed as a pretext to halt and collapse the world economy and the underlying social fabric. Now that part, I think, is increasingly undeniable, and there's no coincidence here, says Koenig. There were a number of preparatory events, too. Some of his folks have been documenting those for decades at this point, all pointing in the same direction, a worldwide monumental historic disaster. It all started at least 10 years ago, probably considerably longer, he says, and I agree, with the infamous 2010 Rockefeller Report. Hey, we've heard that name, haven't we? Which painted the first phase of the monstrous plan with a capital P. It was called the, ready, lockstep scenario. And among the last preparatory moves for the plandemic was a now, at least among libertarian-oriented circles and those that have been paying attention, famous event called Event 201. It was held by none other than the World Economic Forum, the John Hopkins Center for Public Health, SIC, and of course, who else but the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Again, it was in New York, and it was about the Club of the Rich and Powerful. That's the Davos crowd. And participating were a number of interesting groups, like Big Pharma, vaccine interest groups, as well as the CDC, and not only the CDC of the formerly free Americas, but also their version in China. What an amazing coincidence. One of the objectives of Event 201 was a computer simulation of a coronavirus. Isn't it an amazing thing? They happened to pick that very same virus. Plandemic. The simulated virus was even called SARS-2-nCoV, or later 2019-nCoV. The simulation results, as intended, were disastrous, killing 65 million people, booga, 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 in just 1.5 years, plunging the stock market by more than 30%, and causing untold unemployment and bankruptcies. And that's precisely the scenario we're now living, at least the beginning of. The lockstep scenario foresees a number of ghastly and disturbing events or components of the plan, and among those is to be implemented by so-called Agenda ID 2020, another William Gates creation, fully integrated into the UN Sustainable Development Goals. You're going to hear a lot of buzzwords, folks, as some of us, including your host, have literally been paying attention to for decades. A long time ago, prior to the turn of the millennium, I was involved in a Longmont area focus group that was was charged by the city fathers with the idea of envisioning 2020. Hey, right where we are today. And all of our wonderful buzzwords that we have now seen come to fruition. Stakeholders, the Delphi technique that's used to manipulate people to come to the pre-assigned conclusions. And it gave me a really nasty, sour taste for what the UN was doing, but at least it was kind of an awakening experience. Well, we're still seeing that. Not just ID 2020 and the Sustainable Development Goals. Target date, by the way, 2030. That's why they now call it Agenda 2030 rather than Agenda 2015. And it's the same target date that's suggested for completion of ID 2020. So here are the key elements, says this piece, Conspiracy Confirmed, as a precursor to what the world is now living through, and of course what is to come if we don't stop it. And for the most part, I think the world has been too dumbed down to recognize what's going on before it's too late, although we'll have some counterpoint to that in just a few minutes. And all of this demonstrates how this entirely criminal sham has been planned. The parts of the scenario include a massive vaccination program. You know this is coming. It'll probably be mandatory. And it's Bill Gates' dream, and it involves vaccinating 7 billion people, killing who knows how many of them. Gates himself says, quote, if we do a really good job vaccinating, we might reduce the world population by 10 to 15%. Doesn't that give you a great desire to take the poke and die for the team? Massive population reduction, a.k.a. eugenics, in other words, is a big part of it. And as this piece notes, Bill Gates has been advocating for years the need for that massive population reduction. He's been caught doing various things in Africa and India and so forth that, let's just say, well, without going into a lot of detail, aren't particularly savory. Lots of dead and damaged children can testify to that. He's been kicked out of better countries than some of those. And it includes things like an electronic ID for every person on the planet, perhaps a nanochip, possibly injected along with the mandated vaccination, and it could be remotely uploaded and scanned and so forth. Digitized money, no more cash. Universal rollout of 5G, even if it kills lots of people and affects their immune systems and destroys their ability to fight off the kind of things that we're now hopefully going to fight off, to be followed by 6G. You can use some other terms that you've probably heard in here, too. The Internet of Things. If everything you wear, your underwear, your socks, your pants, your blouse, your phone, and everything else you've got has a little chip in it, and the constellation of things orbiting along with you can all be interrogated remotely by Big Brother via the 5G network, and they'll all rat you out and tell Big Brother not only where you are, what you're saying, but which accessories you chose to wear today. They can track you anywhere, especially if you stay 6 feet apart. Isn't that convenient? Well, some of us would refer to what is planned here by another acronym too, the MOTB, the Mark of the Beast. Goal, though, is obvious, and whether you read scripture or just history or their plans already unveiled, the result is the same. Total control of every individual on the planet. It's being sold to the public via the Internet of Things, and that means self-driving cars, roboticized kitchen equipment, artificial intelligence for production and delivery of everything. Trouble is, what the sales pitch doesn't say, says this piece, is just how humans are going to be marginalized and enslaved. Now, when I think about the AI part of this, I remember the first two big lies in Scripture. It's taken the satanic forces millennia to get here, but remember what those two lies were? You can be like God, and you will not die. Well, if there's an AI that has complete control via the Internet of Things, it knows all, it sees all, isn't that kind of like being omnipotent? You can be like God. And, of course, if like the Kurzweils and Gates and other billionaires and socialist planners of the world, our planning has ever comes about, now, it probably won't apply to you, but not to worry. Something else will. They want to transplant their whatever you want to call it. I don't think they like the term soul into a machine. And, therefore, yeah, you will not die. Live forever. It's amazing how those two lies just kind of keep coming back, isn't it? Well, anyway, says the piece here, that is why the rollout of 5G is a must, no matter how bad the health impacts are on not only human beings, but flora and fauna. And even if it influences things like viral infections because of decreased immune function, interference with sleep patterns, etc. The WHO, of course, while they talk about booga, 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 the coronavirus, is pretty quiet when it comes to the satanic health risks of 5G, and even electromagnetic fields in general, but especially millimeter wavelengths. Does that mean, they ask, that WHO has been co-opted by the big and powerful, from Big Pharma to Big Telecom? Well, let's suffice it to say that the WHO was created in 1948 by none other than the Rockefeller Foundation, according to The Lancet. It's also noteworthy that about a half their budget comes from private interest sources. mostly big pharma, but also big telecom. And all of this is a precursor for understanding what's planned, helps to connect the dots. Never mind the stock market crash and the almost universal and justified by nothing quarantine, the lockdowns of everything, and the biggest wealth transfer in history. It's pretty obvious that what's coming was planned. And whether you're talking about the North, where 90% of small and medium businesses are closed, two-thirds of them are probably never going to open again. We've already talked about those economic impacts. In Europe, it's a third to a half of the workforce, depending upon the country, that's going to be unemployed. And in the South, the developing countries, it's even grimmer because there's literally nothing left. They don't have a home to be locked into. No income, no money to pay for food, rent, medications, you name it. And all of this, as the piece reminds us of the famous Kissinger quote from the 1970s. "Who controls the food supply controls the people," said that particular tyrant. And he went on to say, "Who controls the energy can control whole continents. Who controls money can control the world." No, folks, these are not well-meaning people, but they've never made a secret of their desire to control and reduce the world population. Yeah, it's called eugenics, and there's no end in sight to their perfidy. And to the contrary, concludes this piece, it would be that it would seem that almost all governments in the world now have been co-opted or tacitly coerced into adhering to the booga 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 shut it all down and destroy the world guidelines. It's diabolical as well as beyond comprehension. Why? Well, he says, and I disagree, the global elite genuinely believe they're contributing to the future and well-being of humanity. Well, at least their part of humanity. I think the prophet Jeremiah had it better. I've quoted this one a lot lately. Chapter 17, verse 9, he says, "The heart is deceitful above all and desperately wicked. Who can know it?" And if you're looking for an understanding of what's going on in the world, folks, that the human heart is desperately wicked pretty well nails it. And let's not even talk about, the piece concludes, all the HARP, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, weather control, geoengineering, and the like. I guess if you're planning on having a famine, that helps to be able to control the weather and induce it physically as well as economically. From there, I go back to this piece from Clive Mond, and note that he is kind of headed in the same direction without so much of the background, but does note that, remember, Mannarino says the Fed is using this crisis to buy up the world. Hey, is it just possible that they won't have anything worth having once they succeed in destroying it? Well, your host notes, they still got their hidey holes. They still got their Satanism. They still believe that once everybody else is dead, the remaining 500 million or so that'll be their nice personal slaves will be able to come out of the hidey holes where they've got their little boys and little girls already put aside and occupy the renewed Garden of Eden that they've got planned. Now, here, a couple people, and that would include your host, turn to another guy who's been talking about this for a long time, Egon von Greyers. He's been warning about what's happening now for years. And I have his piece as well as the end of this piece from Clive Mond all pointing in that same direction. "Let's be clear about this," says Mond. "The severe depression that we're moving into will not end until this gigantic mountain of debt sludge is rendered utterly worthless. The reset has to happen, and it will happen." But von Greyers points out that the deep state is going to lose control. His suggestion is that this fake money system that they've created will implode. It has to implode. We're looking at sums in the quadrillions of dollars, and how many of those are created depends on how much extra debt can be created before the generally dumb public realizes it, and it all explodes, what has again been called the crack-up boom, when people realize that the money in their wallets is never going to be worth any more than it is today. "As debt goes to zero," writes Egon von Greyers, "most of the assets that were financed by debt will lose 90 to 100% of their real value, and that'll be when people realize that things that they thought were worth something are actually worth less. Ultimately, the power of the printing press, because people realize it's just monopoly money anyway, turns to nothing as it all dies." Now, he thinks this is a bright spot, a good possibility, and I certainly hope he's right. I do think the creator of the universe, and none of these guys talk about that aspect, has a plan here. What we're supposed to do, of course, is to be overcomers, to stand, to get through all of this. Egon von Greyers lays out a number of things that will happen. I don't have time to do them in detail, but obviously jobs, unemployment over 40%, that'll be permanent. Pension funds won't survive. Airlines will go under. Hotels, tourism will all decline dramatically. The luxury hotel market, except for the super, super rich, will die. Big offices in big cities will disappear because people can work from home. And small offices, which don't have to be in city centers, may survive. So he basically sees a few good things coming out of this and says the transition from a world based on a golden calf of false values will be devastating, but there's no other way to end an era based on fake money and fallacious promises. We need that forest fire that burns it all down. What we're seeing is that Big Brother is intending to burn it all down, hoping that their phoenix will rise from the ashes. And the result will be a sounder world. Clearly a lot of suffering, says Egon von Greyers. Many will die prematurely, and the scale of this devastation will be multiples of the coronavirus. Now, he sees, again, the bright shoots there. I'm going to suggest that's great. We know how it all ends. We certainly understand, if we've been reading Scripture, that the ultimate mark of the beast is going to happen. This may, in fact, be the booga-booga-booga crisis that allows him to put it in place. But I do like some positive suggestions as we close it out for today. And number one is obvious. We've talked about it many, many times. And as Mon says, if you haven't done so already, put a significant percentage of whatever assets you have into something that will survive financially, gold and silver, especially silver. Premiums for the physical are now very high. Pay them, he says, because they're going to get even bigger before it becomes physically impossible to get your hands on the silver. Silver's better for everyday transactions, especially silver coins, the kind that were once minted in the United States prior to 1965, because it allows you to show up at a black market and say, hey, I'll swap this silver coin for that bag of potatoes, two cauliflowers, and a leek. But if you whip out a gold bar and say, I'll swap this for a truckload of food, you may find that they pull a gun or a knife on you, take your gold, and keep the food. Yeah, you certainly want to have a supply of non-perishable foodstuffs as much as you can reasonably get on hand. You need access to a good water supply, tankage, or the ability to get fresh water. Also consider solar, which is now cheaper than ever to install. And, of course, if the power grid goes down, and it's likely, that's an important option if you have any desire to have communications and the like. If you've got guns, he said, you're fortunate. You may need them if you want to keep your stuff, get plenty of ammo, and practice, learn how to use them. And finally, and perhaps very importantly, form friendly cooperative alliances with your neighbors, but don't tell them about your food stash, because supposed friends can quickly become enemies when they, as intended, get hungry enough. Finally, it pays to have a supply of cash around the house, regardless of what happens with inflation. Just don't leave too much money any way you count it in bank accounts, because they can slam their doors unexpectedly. And finally, also split things up. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. And as he puts it, lastly, try to avoid brooding about all this. Enjoy life as much as you can. I'm going to suggest there are even more important things. We talk about them all the time, so I'm going to just conclude with them briefly today. Pray. Study to show yourself approved. Most importantly, know who we serve and who we don't serve. That's going to be more important than ever. As Mon puts it, any way you slice it, it's better to be safe than sorry. And most of the things that he's talking about, and I would concur here, are items that you could use in, end up using anyway, even if things don't get as bad as they seem virtually destined to do. So all of that amounts to know what matters and understand what is coming. Understand, too, that the central banksters and the deep state have some big plans. They want to become master of anything and everything and impose their global police state, create their cashless society, put in place, in other words, their mark of the beast. But their plans are dependent on ongoing debt slavery. Here's where the scriptures, folks, can help us out. Because like it or not, and whether people want to admit it or not, it's pretty obvious by now that everything we're seeing has been prophesied for a long time. So what do we do? Well, the economic aspect is obvious. Swap your dishonest weights and measures, a.k.a. fiat currency, for something that's real, like silver. Genuine, constitutional U.S. coin, for example. Well, you still can. The system of dishonest weights and measures is literally being destroyed, and that means turmoil in the years ahead, including plagues like we've already seen, and yes, famine. And the Bible's right about more than just money, too. So study it and take it to heart. But it's important we understand that if we want his protection, we ought to walk in obedience to his conditions. because the alternative's increasingly obvious and ugly.